When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And I was like, What is wrong with me? And then I was Googling hip stuff, and that was all awful to read. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to have a hip replacement by the time I'm 32 or something. And I was just lying awake worrying that I've fucked my body up.
Oh, hold no, you're young and juicy. I mean,
I never feel very young and juicy.
Well, you are, so you'll just have to live with it. It's quite tricky when I feel like I'm the only one in the family that's got a big eye on nutrition, particularly when it comes to fruit and veg. Even to the point where I've said to the kids, right, you know, carrots or broccoli or whatever. And I remember Dave saying at some point, don't have to have vegetables at every meal, do you? And I was like, well, yeah, that's the law.
Otherwise, Jamie Oliver comes to your door and starts.
I know, beats you over the head with a chicken drumstick.
Beats you over the head with a turkey drizzler.
Yeah. Oh, tell me, discuss Mother's Day. Were you treated like a queen?
Can we gloss over? No.
I tell you what. Bloody Christmas presents to relatives, if we do that, because obviously I buy all of them and will sign them all from me, from Dave and the kids. And at least Dave has the wherewithal. If that person then says, oh, thank you so much for XYZ, he'll say, oh yeah, I put loads of thought into that, because obviously he has done none of the purchasing. And around the room, there's a kind of,
Let's talk about that.
Why have we been for generations, maybe even for centuries? That was always a thing in my household too. It, all of the male counterparts. Yeah, my dad will get a little snigger at, oh, I really thought about it very much. Ha ha ha, I hope you love it. This year, I'm not going to laugh. Solidarity with the women who are buying presents out here. All the men, whoever it is that's buying the present, no laugh for the person who does a self-deprecating joke about the fact that they didn't know what was underneath that wrapping paper. No, a stern look is all I'm going to give this year.
Welcome to episode 187 of the Women's Running Podcast. I'm your host, Esther Newman, and she's your other host, Holly Taylor. On this podcast, we talk about health, politics, stuff on TV, and what we ate last night. Occasionally, we talk about running. And we're definitely not talking about running to begin with. We're talking about booze. Our weekends have been very different because of it. Holly's had a jolly time at the pub, while I've been getting acid reflux after half a glass. Aging isn't fair. On to the running bit. Running has become hard for me. I ask the question, is this because it's genuinely hard? Is it because I'm in the middle of tapering, which is always the lowest point in terms of confidence? Or is it age? Answers on a postcard, please. We also talk about how we, firmly within the running bubble, can often think we're not doing very well because this is where we work and these are the Instagram accounts that we follow. But normal people, it turns out, don't know what shoes they should be wearing or understand what a taper is. Are we being too critical of ourselves? Of course, the answer is yes. Now, if you don't already subscribe to Women's Running Magazine, we've got a Pod Squad offer for you lovely people. Hop along to womensrunning.co.uk/podsquad and you'll be able to get your mitts on Women's Running for just £3.50 an issue, saving 42% off the cover price. The subscription is totally risk-free and flexible. You don't need to sign up for years and years. So it's the perfect way to get loads more Women's Running fun times for pennies.
I just went to the pub with a friend and we had like a bit of a, we were like, let's go for a walk and end up at the pub. And then it was a bit fantastic. We were like, we could just go to the pub and just had like two pints instead. and then I got home and Doug had a friend round. They were doing some like music stuff and they were drinking wine. And I was like, well, go on. I'll just carry it on then. So I ended up basically drinking that all afternoon and evening yesterday. It was great.
Oh, I love it.
It was the perfect level as well, where I'm not hungover today, but I definitely got quite drunk yesterday. Perfect.
That's nice. That's really, I do an unexpected drunkenness thing is just it's a joy.
It's so fun, isn't it? It's so fun. It's so fun. Yeah, and I felt like I'd done lots of putting the world to rights to people. And because it was early doors, we still had time for a cup of tea and an episode of Sopranos, and I was tucked up in bed by 11.
Perfect.
Though
so good.
I also had a little bit of a let's do a general weekend catch up. But I was going to say, I had really horrible nightmares last night, and it was a particular scene in The Sopranos that freaked me out.
Which scene?
I don't want to give too many spoilers for people who might not have seen it. But there was I think it's maybe no surprise because this is all first season stuff, whether he's got a strained relationship with his mother.
Yeah.
And in the episode that I just watched, there was this horrible scene and it wasn't very sort of momentous. So I don't know whether you'll remember it, whether it was really a big deal, but I think it's in a dream and he's like knocking on the door, trying to get into this house. And there's this woman who is clearly the mum, like she's the exact shape of the mum, but she's just like a dark shadow on the stairs. And he's trying to get her attention and trying to like get in the door and stuff. But she's just standing there in this shadow on the stairs and she doesn't move. And it really made my skin crawl. And I had horrible nightmares about it last night.
Oh, no.
I mean, all the violence and stuff that goes on, that was what
I never had issues with any violence in that one. But it's always the case, isn't it, when you have drinkies that you get the nightmares or you get vivid dreams, don't you? Because your sleep isn't quite so good.
Yeah, and 3 o'clock spinnies where you're like, oh, was I an idiot at the pub? Did I say stupid stuff?
Who's going to hate me tomorrow?
I know, who's going to hate me tomorrow? But tell me about your weekend. Sorry, I launched in there with news.
You can talk about your weekend. It's nice to hear about your weekend.
I want to hear about yours because I'm presuming it was a bit more chill because a week out from Bath Half.
It's a week out from Bath Half. Yeah, well, it was a bit more chill. Yeah, it's all right. Didn't really do huge amounts. I mean, I'm noticing now that I've got this thing with booze at the moment. I'm going to have to switch my booze of preference, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Which is always annoying, isn't it? I'm Vino Verde. You know me. Love it. That's me. And I have approximately one glass on a Friday, which I have in tiny little glasses, like a little kind of like an inch at a time, and I have about 2 inches. So I think it's about a glass. I have one on a Friday and I have one on a Saturday. That's how wild I am.
Mm-hmm. And God, it must last you so long, your wine.
It does. It's a bit of a shame.
It's eviscerated.
It's a shame because like Vino Verde, if you get a really nice one, and the one I've got, which I love, is like a Waitrose own one. And it's got like a slight fizz to it. Ooh. And it does mean that after about 2 weeks, it does go and then it's not fun anymore. So, but I think it's a moot point because I'm beginning to get a kind of resurgence of a sort of little, it's what I used to consider IBS when I was like sort of 30 years ago. I used to get what was diagnosed as IBS. I don't know if it would be diagnosed as IBS now. It's definitely kind of a food-related thing where basically
and this, yeah, it was, I was talking about it on Friday with a friend, but where basically they're kind of like the top of my stomach goes slightly into spasm. So if I have something that's kind of, yeah, it's not nice. If I have something that disagrees with me, I just get kind of, it's not heartburn. It's a very different feeling. And it just feels very uncomfortable. It feels like it's gone, the top of my stomach has gone to spasm is essentially what it is. And yeah. I remember getting it sort of diagnosed 30 years ago, but kind of IBS diagnoses, I think, were really in their infancy then. And so I just got this doctor who just went, umbrella term, IBS, here are some tablets to help your stomach like stop spasming, off you pop. And there's no such thing as food intolerance, which I think I've probably mentioned before on the podcast.
Yeah.
But
because yours was dairy, wasn't it, at the time?
It was dairy.
It really triggered it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was dairy and stress. And so what I realized was that if I removed the dairy, which I did for about 6 months and then reintroduced it gradually, it was fine. But the big thing that helped was not having the stress in my life at that time, but that sort of going away. Now I'm getting it with white wine, and I know white wine is obviously incredibly acidic. So I'm getting the feeling again, and I've not had it for like decades.
Yeah.
So it's a bit unfortunate. So I am sort of thinking to myself, I'm gonna have to experiment with red wine, I think. Go back to the safety and sanctuary of red wine.
I've got to say, we've been going back to the safety and sanctuary of red wine, not for any particular reason, but Doug bought a bottle of red the other day accidentally when he was trying to buy a bottle of white because it was in the fridge.
Ooh.
How odd is that? But it turns out, I did some research, this particular type, it was a Cab Sauv, and this particular type was best enjoyed chilled. So we had a cold glass of red wine, which felt really strange to me, but it was actually really delicious.
Was it Australian?
It was New World, I think. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, classic.
I think it was. Yeah. Mm, it was really nice.
Yeah, lovely.
And it
lovely.
Meant that we sort of got back on a bit of a red wine hype because I never used to drink red. I find that white is much more palatable if it's plonky.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas red, it really is, just tastes like you're drinking sort of vinaigrette or something if it's cheap. So we hadn't drunk red wine for ages, with the only exception being the bread and butter Pinot Noir or Cab Sauv. Oh my God.
Oh,
have we talked about that wine on this podcast before?
No.
Oh my God. That is my absolute fave at the moment. And I don't think it's that original of me. I think it's quite a popular strain or whatever, vineyard. But they're an American wine and they do a Cab Sauv, a Pinot Noir and a Chardonnay. I am not normally a Chardonnay drinker, but this Chardonnay is like melted butter. Ooh.
Yeah, if you get a good one, oh my God, yeah.
It changed my life. It changed my world. So I love that. And we absolutely caned that over Christmas, but it's like 15 quid a bottle. So for us, that's not a Friday night plonk.
Yeah, well, we spend a bit more money on wine these days just because...
Well, if you're not drinking that much of it, then you want to feel like it's a real, real treat if you're having one glass.
But the thing is because like... Because I've been kind of drinking loads of white and not loads of red, it means we have got a bit of a backlog. We've got quite a lot of wine downstairs, a lot of red wine, which we don't open it because Dave will open it. I'll have one glass and it sits around for ages and ages and I end up putting it into stews. So when you've spent 15 quid on a bottle of wine, that does seem like an awful kind of waste. So we kind of really have to have a reason for it. But I tell you what we've got. Do you have Vivino as an app?
Yes, is that where you scan the label? I love doing that.
It's great.
I'm not very disciplined at doing it though, so I can't remember the last time. Let's see, when's the last time I would have? Oh, it's so long ago that I can't actually show you my Vivino because I have to put my phone on airplane mode for the pod, and it's on the cloud. It's taken it off. I've not used it enough.
Yeah. Oh,
but it is so fun, isn't it?
Oh, it's so much fun. It's so much fun, particularly if we've been visited by, for instance, some, relatives, and they might bring a bottle of wine. and I am not going to mention which particular relative, but that we have some
so
relatives
that we don't
might
hijack their car on the way to you and steal all the wine they bring.
Well, quite the reverse, in fact. I have a particular relative that turns up with a bottle of wine in hand, and Dave will do a sneaky Vivino and just go, "Oh my God, it's $6.99.
Put it in the basement. Yeah. Yeah. I love Vivinoing, but isn't it absolutely miserable when you do have one that you really like? I bet if I looked at bread and butter reviews now, then some sommeliers would be like, the trashest wine I've ever tasted. Whatever. Absolutely not worth your time. Pour straight down the sink if gifted. I'm sure that's what everybody will say about my face.
Also, we've realized that with the star rating that they give things, is that they are sort of within a kind of a price bracket. So something could get like 3.5 stars, which is sort of actually quite good. But it's 3.5 stars for bottles of Plonk that are under sort of £7.
Yeah.
So you can't fairly compare the sort of tastes, really, of something that's sort of £6 and something that's sort of £18 or whatever.
No, that's completely fair. Though we did a wine tasting where the bloke did say that, first of all, I feel like he said anything but above a certain amount, it was like above 30 quid, 40 quid or something, it's like, it's just bollocks at that point. If they're like, it's not nicer. Like, it's just, I don't know, come from some posh vineyard somewhere, or like you're paying for maybe how rare it is or whatever. You're not paying anything for how nice it is. It's like about 30, 40 quid is the nicest wine that you could possibly get. But then he also said something like the ones between sort of 5 and 15 are like, you're also just sort of paying for production and label and stuff there. Like they're not actually necessarily nicer than each other.
Yeah. I've forgotten what the cutoff price is, but I remember there is a price. It's something like about £6 or £7, isn't it? Where most of that money is the price of the bottle and the shipping and the label and everything else. So if you pay more than
we've
six
we've watched
or
the
seven,
advert for Naked Wines, haven't we? That's what's happened here. I think that's what they say. And that's why they offer their services, isn't it? Because they're like, oh, this is all of that stuff taken out. Just the wine, just a really nice wine.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think I have seen that advert, but I mean, I agree with it. You know, I don't see adverts. Yeah. When would I see an advert? I don't watch telly.
Oh, I don't think I see either, I suppose. I think I hear it on podcasts or whatever. Yeah, probably.
Right. Oh, one of those. Yeah.
Could be a Naked Wine advert in this episode, so listen out.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. There could be. But yeah, otherwise, other than kind of weird IBS-y type symptoms.
Yeah. Tell me all about those quickly a little bit more. Not in a you have to divulge your deepest, darkest secrets about it. But
well, no, that's
do you think,
it. I mean,
yeah, would you go to the doc again? And would you sort of.
Nah, can't be asked. No, that's it. It's just like, it just feels triggered by the acids in white wine. So I am just going to shift to a different wine and see how it goes.
And see how it goes.
But yeah, fine. And I mean, in terms of like the weekend, I did go for a run. I mean, I went for a run this morning as well, but I did my longer run yesterday, which was just over 8 miles. So last weekend I did 13. This weekend I did 8 because I'm heading towards Bath Half next weekend. And it was absolutely awful. Really, really horrible time. I think it's classic taper when that kind of last long but not the longest run, you know, during your taper.
Yeah, 8 miles is still like, really long. But if you're psychologically going, oh, it's only... And you're sort of expecting it to be done quite quickly. And then an hour in, you're like, bloody hell, I've still got quite a way to go here. I relate to that feeling.
There was no point in that run that felt nice. It was all really, really hard work. I can't mention the brand, I was testing a new pair of shoes as well yesterday. And honestly... And I am not going to say who this is, but honestly, it felt like I was running in DMs. I know, I shall tell you off air. But yeah, they were terrible. So
oh
that
dear.
Didn't, That didn't help. So bad shoes, and I don't know what possessed me really. It's because I genuinely like the brand, so I was like, oh, this will be fine.
Okay.
It wasn't fine. But kind of all in terms of like
all of our brains are sort of the maths is like going over our faces right now. We're all trying to work out
who it is that you're talking about.
Yeah. I like a lot of brands.
That's true. It's hard.
But cardiovascularly was also really, really hard. I found the whole thing really, really hard. I've still got that kind of hip thing going on. Everything was just, I came back and I was just exhausted by it. And I went for a run this morning as like an ease off kind of just do a 3 mile thing. I went super, super slowly. I went in super comfortable shoes. It was still really, really hard. And I'm running slower than I have ever run before. And I'm beginning to wonder, and this is a question, I'm going to open it up to the floor. Is it because I'm older? I'm just running super slow and I'm not trying to run any faster than I am.
Yeah.
But you know the sort of pace you are where you kind of halfway through, you just check your watch and you see what it is.
Yeah.
And you just, my general pace has always been roughly the same. Like my kind of easy run pace has always been like around about 10 minute miles, maybe a little bit slower sometimes, especially on a long run, but that's out the window, you know? And sometimes like year before, I would do an easy 3 miler and I would just, you know, in a kind of lax way, just glance at my watch and realize I was doing 9.5 minute miles just because it was easy and I was just churning through the miles. That never, ever happens now. Never.
No.
I never, ever, ever go under 10.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. And maybe there's a thing about being being older. I've got no idea. But my initial thought then was just going to be, do you think that maybe you are doing a lot at the moment and your body is quite exhausted? Because I'm not slagging this off. You're definitely going to absolutely nail it. You've done so much work. But 13 miles for your long run and 8 miles for your taper is a lot. That's a lot more than I've ever done for a half. That's more than anybody I know who's training for Bath half at the moment. Not to make you feel weird, but just saying, I think that's a lot. And I wonder if maybe your body, and this is the second half that you will have done. I mean, also, you've done halves in preparation for these halves. Like you've run a lot of half marathons, basically, in the last little while. Do you think that maybe your body is a little bit like, give me a little rest?
There might be something in that, I guess. Right. So, but I'm weighing up the fact that previously when I've trained for races, I've done exactly what I'm doing now.
And really? I don't think this is normally what you do.
Yeah. Well, think about the last time I did a half, the last time I did a half that felt fine was New Forest, right? And that was September. And that was leading up to the New York Marathon. So before I did that half, I'd already done 15, 16 miles.
Yeah.
Like running in the run up to it. I didn't taper at all, just did the half. The half was like a drop down week for me. And it was all absolutely fine. I was running 4 times a week. I was doing one strength training at the time. Wasn't doing any yoga.
Can't maintain marathon training all the time.
Yeah, I know that. I know. But I don't know. It just feels like sometimes it's fine for my body to do that and sometimes it's not.
But maybe that is just the natural fluctuation of your energy levels and the needing to sort of have like on and off times. Like maybe that's why it feels a bit like that, because sometimes you're raring to go and you're up for it and you feel rested, and sometimes you're not feeling that rested because you've just been training for a big, maybe psychologically as well, you're like, I've just done a bloody half and now I'm here again and this all feels a bit and it might not be that, and I might just be projecting because it might not be a lot of running to a lot of people listening, but I wonder if it's you being a bit hard on yourself when actually, no wonder if you're doing so much at the moment, you're finding it a bit more difficult to have to feel that fresh leg feeling.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I mean, you might be absolutely right. That and I think it's I think it does us all a really good favor to check in occasionally with people that you don't always check in with. And I think because of living in my like Instagram bubble of just looking at other people and what they do, the people that I'm looking at mostly are people that run huge amounts of miles or personal trainers or, you know, people that are trying to kind of get certain speeds or whatever. And I'm not trying to emulate them in any way, but being in that bubble makes me think that bubble is normal.
Yeah.
And you know, it was really interesting. I was at boot camp on Saturday and there was a few of us that are going to do the Bath Half next weekend. And I was speaking to a lovely woman who was doing some training, and I think she does it every year. And I said, oh, you know, how's the long runs been? And she said, oh, it's fine. I haven't really done as much as I would have liked, but my longest run will have been 7 miles before I do it. Do you think that's okay to me? And I was like, yeah, I think that's absolutely fine. As I would have said to you, if your longest run had been seven miles.
Yeah, I remember Simon, our old boss. He's still sort of our boss. Don't know how to describe him. One of our colleagues, he said to me once, he does a lot of running, and he was like, if you can run 7 miles, then you can run half marathon. And he just said it very flippantly, as if that was like, of course you can, it's not a big deal.
And of course you can, and she's done it before, and she knows what it's like, and she knows. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly when you've done a half marathon before, and particularly if you know the course really, really well, like, you know, after you've done half of it, whether you need to really slow the fuck down or whether you can just carry on as you are or whatever, you know that in your bones, kind of thing. So she knows the course, and 7's absolutely fine. But it did give me pause for thought, because I just sort of came home and I'd been over worrying about whether I should do 8 or 9 as my taper. And she just said that she was doing 7 as her longest. And the other thing that came that was a big kind of slap in the face was how much of a bubble we're in. I have a little WhatsApp group for the parents at my kids' school, because we're all running to raise money for the hall, because the government won't provide enough funding. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that there.
Our weekly soapbox moment.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, on this, there's 11 of us that are running it. And one of the guys on there said he had to Google the term tapering because he'd never heard of it before.
Oh my goodness.
And I just thought, goodness me, we just assume so much knowledge, don't we?
Yeah. People, I mean, I often think it, even just making wild assumptions about people because I haven't spoken to them. But on my long run on Friday, multiple blokes were running past in like jogging bottoms on their run, or like some guy was running and he had like sort of chino-y slack type things on, and he looked like, you know, have you seen the videos of Richard E. Grant's running?
With a shirt on.
It was like that. And I did think, I was like, blimey, we are lucky that we have not that there's anything wrong with any of that, but obviously it is going to make your life a bit more difficult. Whereas we've got knowledge and kit and information, and we're in a community that share all of that knowledge all the time with each other, that we're quite well armed for things like that to make long runs feel a bit more comfortable. I cannot imagine going out in my joggers and sort of, I don't know, vaguely running along because I don't know how to track it, or like, It would make it so much more difficult. But I find that so interesting that there are people who would go to boot camp. So they're obviously investing in their fitness and their exercise to quite a degree, but who wouldn't know what a taper was?
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it, that people wouldn't kind of start getting interested in that side of things. But like the clothing thing, I find super interesting, because you see it like if you live in a place where there is going to be a race within the next sort of couple of weeks, it's very interesting, because you see, obviously, you see a complete upsurge in local people taking to the streets and doing a bit more running,
it's
because
nice.
they're going to do it, which is really nice. But you do see that upswing in people running, wearing stuff that you wouldn't necessarily, coming from a running brand, recommend that they wear. And I mean, you see it, I see it a lot on New Year's Day with people just going, right, that's it, fuck it, I'm out.
I'm going for a run. I mean, the first time I went for a run, I must have worn bizarre stuff because you don't necessarily want to start investing in something if you
Which I get, but the only time where I'm just like, oh God, is when I see them running in things like Converse. And you just sort of think,
I think jogging bottoms man had Converse on. And I was like, he's going to do himself such a mischief here. He's going to get horrible chafed thighs and he's going to have very, very sore feet.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. And never want to run a half marathon ever again because their experience is like that. But I don't know where all that came from, really. But it's just, oh no, I guess it's kind of, it's understanding what people are thinking about outside the bubble of being completely invested in running.
Yeah, what you were just saying, is that you're so used to seeing, it's very normalized to you that quite what some people might consider quite extreme like training, that feels like very, very, very normal training because you're surrounded by coaches and PTs and people who are always talking about the optimum ways of, and you know, you've used things like, I guess it also, it's so interesting. It's really made me think about the privilege of having money to invest in running.
Yeah.
Because in theory, a lot of the reason that people do start running is because it's free. They can get out the door and leg it down the road. And all you really need, like, although you might feel a little bit silly in your joggers and you probably will get some quite nasty chafing and they probably will fall down. The only thing, like you were saying, that you really shouldn't run in is your Converse. I guess the only thing you actually need to invest in is a decent pair of running shoes.
Yeah. But
other than that, it's very accessible. Off you can go and you don't have to spend the kind of, you don't have to commit to a monthly membership like you would with a gym. You don't have to pay for an expensive class. You don't have to. I was talking to someone who does CrossFit recently. Oh my, you need to take out a second mortgage if you want to do CrossFit. It's ridiculous. So I love that running is that. But yeah, I think we are so caught up in a world that, like, that obviously we live and breathe it because it's our job. It's also a lot of our, even if maybe not necessarily all our real life friends and family, our sort of bubble within the pod squad and stuff, that we're all so invested in this thing and we all pour money into it and time into it and stuff all the time. But actually, that's not necessarily the average runner's experience.
No. And I mean, and you're not gonna, unless you really start getting interested in running as a thing by itself, you're not really gonna go down that Google rabbit hole of figuring out things like tapering or specific shoes, or you know, like when I had a little a Facebook notification because 14 years ago I was running a half marathon in Bath and I'd said something about, and I was like, oh God, that seems like such a long time ago, because obviously that's pre-kids and all that kind of thing. But I remember what a huge, you know, what I really loved back then was that this kind of quite a big step for me was to go and get my shoes from the independent running shop in Bath, like going
still there.
But I remember going there and speaking to people there and feeling like I was part of something, you know, rather than just kind of running in the shoes that I'd bought some kind of crap shoes off the internet or whatever beforehand. And I was like, right, these aren't working for me. I'm going to go and get properly togged out. And it was such a nice, wonderful kind of welcoming, you know, experience. That's something that I would like to kind of like wave a magic wand over the Converse wearers and just go, just, you know, if you can afford it, just go and do this. Or I mean, or do what I did at the time, which I think was to go along, get my gait analyzed, talk about the best sorts of shoes for me, and then say, I'll have a think about it. Thanks so much for all of that. And then I go on to Sports Shoes, buy them last year's version for much cheaper.
That's a great idea. That's excellent advice. Best advice in the world, actually, about running. Sorry to the independent running shops listening.
Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it?
If you are somebody who can't, who is worried about money but wants to get into running, then it's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't think I spent more than £50 on my trainers back then. I was, Yeah. But anyway, yeah. It's a weird thing. And I think it does pull me up short when I do speak to people who aren't in the bubble, who say, oh, I'm going to run 7 miles. Do you think that's long enough? And I don't even know why they're asking me, do you think it's long enough? I think it's just because I'm known as being a runner. And I'm known as being a runner at boot camp only because my boot camp instructor is constantly haranguing me for my crappy hamstrings, you know, because I can't touch my toe. Oh, because you run. And it's like, you know, I know my hamstrings are like 1 inch long or something because I can't, you know, basically made of fiberglass and brittle as all hell. Mm-hmm. So she's constantly making me do extra little stretchy things in front of people. Just
that's quite sweet. Is it nice to feel like part of a gang like that with boot camp?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I had a little bit of a pang of jealousy then when you were talking about that. Not of the hamstring exercises, but of the feeling known in your group sort of thing.
Yeah, it's nice. It is really nice. But you know how unsociable I am? It's taken me years. I've been doing boot camp since Felix was one. So, and she's 9 now. So I've been doing it for 8 years. And I think it's only in the last year that I've actually said hello to people or had conversations with people. So it's taken me 7 years to sort of go,
I mean, that's I feel a bit like that with my choir. It's been 18 months-ish since I started going to my choir. And I feel like now I've just got to a point where I still sometimes stand on my own in the break. I know. I don't know what it is. I think it's, but maybe I don't give a huge air of friendliness at choir because it's my, I guess we talk to people all day in our job and I have a very, very social life in general. And, and so maybe it's my little place that I quite like just going and singing. But yeah, also it is, I will call it out. I don't know if anyone listens to the pod who's part of the choir, but it is a little bit cliquey. I think it can feel a bit like there are some people who have been going for a really long time since it sort of started. Yeah. And then there's sort of everybody else who's come in as newbies. And I still feel like a bit of a newbie, even though I've been going there for a year and a half. And generally there's another newbie standing on their own that you can go and talk to as well. But there will be the sort of gangs of, and I suppose also, more young people are joining, but in general I think I'm quite young for the choir, and so most of them are people who I suppose gravitate towards each other because they've got kids at similar schools or blah blah blah. Make up some kids. Oh, that'd be quite fun.
Just do it.
I like the idea of going to like a, is this a bit psychopath of me, but I love the idea of going to a club or like a class or something like that. You could just start a whole new identity, couldn't you?
You could, though. You could.
You could. You could just be like, I don't know, be, oh, yes. Oh, I've got darling little Hugo. He's in year one. And I've got blah, blah, blah. And you could just make up a whole thing. I could be a florist. And as long as nobody asks too many questions.
You know it will come back to bite you on the ass if you
It will bite me carry on with the subject of, can you provide the arrangements for my wedding or something? Next thing you know, you'll be roped into us having to pick a load of flowers along, loads of daffodils along the motorway or something to turn into a thing.
Oh, and God. Steal a 5-year-old to be like some kind of page boy or something.
Yes, because they've of course.
Grown to love you so much. But I've not asked you about your running. What's your, how's yours been going?
Mine is okay as well. I think I've still been, I had a really good week last week where did we talk about the fact that I skived off my long run on the pod?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so update on that for everybody, because I think I realized this after the episode. I was thrilled to discover I'd actually been working a week ahead. So I didn't need to mess. I'd miscalculated. So I didn't need to mess around with any sort of 6.5, then blah, 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 or whatever. I can still do. I believe I've still got time to do. Let me just double check. Mm-hmm.
Double check. How many weeks have we got anyway?
Yeah, there's still time to do 11 as my long run and have a 2-week taper. I could even do 12 have a week taper. So
yeah.
I'm actually, I'm realizing that I
doing okay, actually, and that it was fine that I missed it. I'm just considering that a drop down week. And by drop down, I mean be hungover and eat Domino's on the sofa.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
But I think because I felt slightly guilty, I had quite a good bounce back week last week. Where I did what I was supposed to do the week before. So I did 2 3-milers and a 6-miler. I thoroughly enjoyed both the 3-milers. They were really, I just feel like not at all to be annoying about it, because it's still not the fastest I've ever run. I've still got twice as big an arse than when I first started running. So it's always going to be a bit of a letdown if I'm getting too overexcited about pace. But I feel like I'm getting a bit faster, and that feels kind of, I don't know, it gives you that boost, doesn't it? Because if you've done the distance before, if you've done a half marathon, it can feel a little bit boring, or a little bit sort of, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? What am I doing this for? But I don't think I'm going to get a PB or anything, but this is the fastest and strongest I think I felt at the beginning of a training block. And amazing. It makes me feel quite excited. Yeah, because I'm like, maybe it will be not too uncomfortable. And you never know, do you? You never know when you're going to turn up on race day, and it's going to be the day that your leggings split and you get a horrible chafe thing, or you didn't hydrate properly, so you have a pounding headache for the whole run, or you never know. But in theory, I'm feeling quite good about New York because, I feel quite strong at the mo. So my 2 3-milers were really good. Also, it's just lovely because it's early spring vibes. So I haven't had to. Oh, isn't it gorge? Last week was actually really nice. I didn't have to battle any elements. I wore a cap for one of my runs because it was so sunny. I know.
Oh, lovely.
It was amazing. So I'm definitely feeling like I'm really enjoying running, and I've fallen back in love with it all a little bit. And it's really nice. That being said, the 6-mile, I got way too cocky. And until about four and a half, I was having that feeling where I was flying, and I was like, God, it's just so easy at the moment, and having all of those thoughts. And then the last mile and a half kicked my ass. I did it.
Oh, no.
I did it, but it really kicked my ass. And for exactly the same thing that you had, it just, from about that 4 mile, 4.5 mile mark, my right hip started to really hurt again. And it's becoming a bit of a theme that used to happen always when I would run for sort of 10 miles or more. And I always wondered whether it was maybe like a core thing, that it was like, it was when I was starting to get really tired, and I wasn't kind of, my posture wasn't very good anymore. And so I was kind of slipping into not great habits. But I feel quite good. I've been doing core work, and I've been doing yoga, and I've been feeling relatively good about my strength at the moment. But it's kicking in earlier than ever before. It's like 4 or 5 mile mark that my hip starts killing at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. It is really annoying. I know. And my hip is really beginning to kind of grumble. And so Note to self, I am definitely going to make an appointment to see a physio after I've done I'm just going to get the half out of the way this weekend, and then I'm going to go and see a physio. But I think, generally speaking, I would suggest that if something is not happy on one side of your body, it's because of an imbalance. I wouldn't suggest it's a core thing when it's hips. It's more likely to be, it could be something to do with our ITB. It could be something to do with, hip flexors. It could be something to do with glutes.
My glutes really hurt, actually. Like, it was really, I think that was also a reason why I got a bit panicky. I was lying awake on the Friday night after I'd done the long run worrying, because not only was my, I think you can hear on the Office Chair to 5K podcast that I'd just done a yoga class that I'm still feeling the effects of today. It was one of those ones where you get like three or four days of sort of DOMS that are sort of lingering in the background a bit. And it did help going on the run. It did kind of shake it out a little bit, but I was really sore afterwards. And so I was lying in bed on the Friday night, and you know, when you're sort of barely able to roll over, my core really hurt. My hip was really sore. My right glute as well behind the hip was really, really killing. And I was like, what is wrong with me? And then I was Googling hip stuff, and that was all awful to read. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to have a hip replacement by the time I'm 32 or something. And I was just lying awake worrying that I've fucked my body up basically by doing too much running and not enough of something else. Strength, physio, stretching, whatever it is.
Oh, hold no, you're young and juicy. I mean, like,
the I only, never feel the very only... young and juicy.
Well, you are, so you'll just have to live with it.
Live with it like a pine cone.
No, that's me. I think both of us would do well to go and speak to someone that knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And I think usually when I go to the physio and say, oh, something on the out, and oh, the other thing that it can be something to do with lower backs, there can be referred pain. So sometimes this is the thing that really gets me, is that a pain somewhere on one of your legs could be something to do with an issue that is bloody miles away.
Yeah.
So that always really irritates me as well. It's like, oh, come on, body, be at least honest to me. But it's not. So there's that as well. But I think like with the physios, when I've been there with like various bits and pieces wrong with me, normally what they do is they sort of say, well, you've got to do these strength exercises, but you've got to do it on both sides of your body. What's happened is that, you know, one is kind of, and sometimes it's to do with the fact that one of my legs is ever so slightly shorter than the other. But it's, you know, mostly most people have one stronger side and one sort of slightly weaker side. And
okay, maybe you overcompensate
and it's da da da. You'll be fine. You'll just have to, as I think I said in an Instagram post recently, you'll just have to do a series of really boring exercises a lot.
I will. You know, which I know which I will. I tell you what, I have been doing, and I know this sounds really counterintuitive, so I'm not saying this is like advice to anybody. I'm just throwing it out into the ether as a thing I've been doing differently. I'm awful at warming up, and normally the extent of a warm-up that I might do is walk down the hill in a slightly weird way or something before I start my run. Likewise, I have actually been trying. Yeah, I'm terrible. I have actually been trying though to do some dynamic stretching before I start, mainly just because when I started the training plan it was freezing, and we'd been talking a lot on the pod and stuff about you actually have to warm your body up when it's cold and stuff. And now I've got into the habit of doing barely anything. We're still talking, oh my goodness, so pathetic, but a few sort of hip swings on each side and some arm rotation-y swingy things. Maybe I'm going too hard on the hip swings. Maybe I need to do them a little bit more gently. Maybe I'm sort of, I don't know.
It might be.
Swinging especially if hips around like one of those little wooden bird things that goes doink, doink, doink. That's kind of how I feel like maybe I'm going a bit too intense with it.
It could be. It could also be the fact that we sit at desks all day. And so one of the biggest culprits, I think, for stiffness and, you know, whatever is chairs, bad chairs. And really, we should be standing up a lot more. And I know, I cross my legs, which is like a cardinal sin. If you ever go to a physio, they're like, oh, stop crossing your legs.
I do loads of weird stuff as well. Like just realizing I tried to force myself to put my feet on the ground parallel, you know, like at a right angle then. I can't. Yeah. I have to put them a weird angle where they're like on the bit of wood under my desk. I have to rest them on there, or yeah. I have to sort of fold them underneath me and rest them on the office chair. I can't just put them in front of me. I it makes me want to like kick, like I've been on a long haul flight for 8 hours. It's so weird.
Yeah. It's really weird. And I sit at a kitchen island, which is solid down to the floor. So I can't sit with my knees underneath my laptop. I sit slightly skew-if as well, which is, I don't know, probably the cause of many of my issues. But
it's nice to, you know, can't you just have a little bit of fun in life? Everything, we could always be doing better, couldn't we? Sitting even, we could be doing better.
Even sitting, and I thought I was pretty good at that, turns out.
I know, me too. Speaking of sitting, I actually saw something very interesting in the news this week.
Okay.
And I wish I had it in front of me because I don't want to give false info. But it was something along the line, to paraphrase it, it was something along the lines of every step that you do between 2,000 and 10,000 a day makes a difference to your preventing early death, even if, like us, as we've discussed many times, you live a sedentary lifestyle. So it was like basic, because you know they say aiming for sort of 10,000 a day. Fucking hell, 10,000 a day is actually really not feasible for a lot of people. And I realized that my walk to choir, which is takes me half an hour, it's the other end of town. It's only 4,000.
Yeah.
So it's really not that, like, that's half an hour of walking and that's only 4,000 steps. It's a lot of walking a day that a lot of people don't have time for. But actually, even though you could obviously still be aiming for that 10,000, don't go, oh, fuck it, I didn't manage it. 2,000 or more starts to actually make the like incremental difference. And I guess,
oh, that's so nice.
Once you sort of get over 10, I guess what it means between 2 and 10 is that after 10, it doesn't really make much of a...
I really like that.
Muchness, but yeah, how good is that?
I wish, though,
something
that's great.
Something is better than nothing.
I love that. And I wish that the powers that be would come out with a very similar article talking about nutrition. Because I would love that. Not about myself, because I pile in veg and I think I kind of eat quite well, generally speaking.
Yeah, you do
not
eat well.
Not to show off, but I think I do.
She does
now
eat
that
well.
I stopped eating so many crisps. But in terms of my kids, what I'd really love is for them to go, right, okay, we'd love it. And it would be amazing if you had 5 a day, although that was kind of, you know, born out of some kind of advertising thing. But the absolute minimum, in order to kind of, you know, there needs to be like a 2,000 steps a day.
Yeah,
I want them to say, look, one apple and half a potato and you're laughing. You know, I just want them to say.
Don't give up. Exactly. You know? Or like, you actually really inspired me about this was, I'm afraid I'm never going to be a whole wheat girly. I'm never going to do that for every meal. But it did really encourage me to go, you know what? I am going to, when I have the conscious decision to, I'm going to swap it out. And like, I do HelloFresh, and generally I've never had whole wheat pasta or brown rice or anything through HelloFresh, unfortunately. But this morning I needed to nip out to the shops to get coffee and bread and bits. And I was like, I'm going to get whole wheat seeded bread and I'm not going to get white trash sugar bread, just because it absolutely doesn't mean that I can never get white bread again. Because I think our brains try to do these like hard and fast rules, don't they?
Yeah.
But it's just going to be this one time I am going to make that switch and I will have my beans on toast with seeded brown bread today. And let's not worry if I then have white pasta later on. Like it's just trying to remember to still don't deny your body all of those things, because you can't get it right every single time. Like,
oh God. Absolutely. Yeah. Like we have always had brown and wholemeal bread. And, but kind of fairly recently actually. And I think it was just through something that was, it was probably like a yellow stickered loaf that was in the supermarket, that we ended up coming home with some tiger bread, and obviously the kids were delighted and they just yummed it all down. And so we do now, like, just we're working from the other, going from the other way. It's just like, let's not do hard and fast, because if we just do like what I used to term knitted bread, if we only ever did that kind of 1970s bread,
yes,
the kids only had like tiny amounts of it, right? They have tiny, yeah. tiny amounts, but don't actually eat that much of it. So we just swap in a bit of white bread for you know, shits and giggles, like occasionally, yeah. just for
nice.
You know, for love.
Also gives but a variety, also, doesn't it, of food, and then yeah. you don't get sort of. It must be so difficult having kids and trying to teach them not to, because I have not mastered this whatsoever, and I'm nearly 30. I cannot get my head around the idea that food has always been reward and or punishment for me, really. I'm really, really trying to reframe that in my brain. And HelloFresh has actually really helped, because it's meant that it takes a lot of the choice out. So I'm not overthinking, what am I going to have for dinner? Is it going to be, oh, shouldn't I really have a salad? But, oh, I really, really want this. And I've worked really hard today, so I deserve this. But it just takes all of that out. And I just have what's in front of me. But it must be so difficult trying to teach children food can be completely enjoyable. It is absolutely fine to have a big old slice of tiger bread and go, fucking hell, that's so good. And to enjoy it and to learn to experiment with food like that, but also to not then get this thing in your head that brown bread is because you're naughty and white bread is because you're good or something like that. How do you do that?
Well, I don't. Oh, I fail miserably all the time. And particularly, I think it's like, it's quite tricky when I feel like I'm the only one in the family that's got a big eye on nutrition, particularly when it comes to fruit and veg. Mm. I mean, even to the point where I've sat there with Dave when I've said to the kids, right, you know, carrots or broccoli or whatever. And I remember Dave saying at some point, don't have to have vegetables at every meal, do you? And I was like, well, yeah, that's the law. It's not the law. But in my head, it's like, well, of course you do. But
otherwise, Jamie Oliver comes to your door and starts.
I know, beats you over the head with a chicken drumstick.
Yeah, beats you over the turkey drizzler. Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of, I don't think that I've got that at all, because we still talk about treats. You know, it's the same thing. So rather than all food being the same, it's like, this is a treat and this is not a treat. So have the apple and then you can have the sweet kind of thing.
But it's so difficult, because if you are viewing all food as the same, let's be honest, like you are just going to eat the white bread and the crisps and stuff all the time, aren't you? Like, unless your dog is really weird and he's like, I love brown bread. Like, genuinely, most of us like white bread, don't we? Because it's nice and it's easy to digest and it tastes good and it's soft and it makes us feel like little grown-up babies and we love it. But, like, how do you... It's so difficult to frame that in your brain, isn't it? Where it's like, yeah, you want to be giving yourself that, knowing that maybe it doesn't have exactly the same effects on your body as the white, as the brown seeded loaf. But it's also equally it's equally nutrition for your body. God, it's hard.
Yeah.
Also, we probably should have done a bloody trigger warning for this episode, shouldn't we? Because all of this is so, you know, it's a minefield of confusion in our funny little chimpanzee brains, isn't it?
It really is. And I do, and I think it's kind of, you know, obviously it's society. Obviously, it's our own little brains and our families and how we've been brought up and what kind of all the sort of weird things that may have just sort of trickled down from how food was kind of perceived and spoken about at home. But then also it's age as well. So I feel like I have a much better relationship with food now, unsurprisingly, than I did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And so, yeah, with age has come a kind of an acceptance, but also knowledge. And the fact that I now do, unless I am pissed, I now view food as nutrition. Mm-hmm. And so I look at food and think to myself, what is going to be good for me? What is actually going to be good? What's going to taste nice, but what's actually going to be nourishing me and being good for me? And so that does mean that I do tend to make kind of more healthier, more nutritious choices.
Yeah.
So that's something. So it's really boring, but I think it's just an age thing.
But you are right. It's good to think about that as a holistic thing, where it's like, not just what am I going to enjoy stuffing in my gob right now, but also it's so fine to do that too. I had a cream egg last night.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. And
I had two pints in the pub and then came home and had a glass of wine. So
Perfect. Yeah. And I had, and all of those have got like hops and grapes in them. So you were feeding
That's
your
5 day.
True. Anyway.
That was my 5 day.
It's all good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lovely.
Fermented food's really good for you. Good for the gut.
Very good for you. Yeah, it's basically you're having like kefir, aren't you? and I had a rock cake yesterday, and because it's like, well, it's Mother's Day, I'm going to have cake.
She's from 1946.
I know. Bloody love a rock cake. I love a rock cake.
Oh my God. Yeah, tell me, will you discuss Mother's Day. Were you treated like a queen?
Can we gloss over? No. Right, do not believe everything you see on Instagram and Facebook, and never more so when it comes to Mother's Day, because not all mothers were sort of treated to a charmingly made breakfast in bed and a roast dinner at a local establishment. Lots of us were given some lovely things. Lots of us may not have got anything at all. I had the randomest selection of things. Be a bitch. And it was a very interesting morning. But it was fine. It was lovely. I got up, I went for a run, and I managed to get a rock cake in the afternoon.
That's
so
lush.
That was very lovely.
That's great.
It was super lovely. Yeah. So it's really
very nice.
It was nice.
I did remember to do flowers for my mum from afar, which was nice. Oh my goodness. Doug and I were talking about this, and the older sibling conundrum, especially I think when you're the older sister conundrum, that like I had the organization, and I'm not slagging any of this off. If my mum's listening to this, it's because I love you very much that I did this, but let's be real. I had to organize the choice of the flowers and pay for them and make sure that they were going to be delivered on time and write a lovely note and that make sure that my mum was going to be very happy and feel very loved, and then have to sign it from me and my sister. Doug has exactly the same, but he's the sister.
So he just has to go, okay.
I was talking about it to him the other day. And again, if my mother-in-law's listening, close your ears, Joe, because you don't need to know what awful little swines your children are. But
oh my God.
Long-suffering Amy is doing all of that. And then they're all getting their names put on it. And I was like, do you ever lob Amy like a tenner for that? And he's like, nah. She's just sorting that out every year. And so shout out to the oldest sibling who has to do all of that stuff while all the younger siblings, even if they are 30 years old, get their names whacked on the end of it and don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Yes. You know what? I have exactly... I know there are a brother and sister, double act. I'm going to keep them completely nameless from that. But actually, it's the younger sister. It's the younger sister that takes on the role of doing everything because of the older brother. And
Is it you and Sam?
No, it's not. No. He's way better than I am. No. But with these two, it's just like, why are you doing this? Just don't put his name there. But I wonder that must be a female thing, not just an age thing, because she's the youngest one.
You can't not. I looked at it and I looked at it for ages and I was like, shall I just claim this for myself? Shall I go, love from your most kind and loving and thoughtful daughter? Unsurprisingly, your other one hasn't even remembered that it's Mother's Day, let alone got you anything. But I was like, I can't. And I just whacked an Andes on the end and sent it. Yeah. In the past, I've actually texted her and I've been like, by the way, don't be surprised or, knowing face when flowers arrive from her or whatever. Didn't even bother to tell her this time. I was just like, let's just take the loss and let's move on.
Mind you, I tell you what, bloody Christmas presents to relatives, if we do that, because obviously I buy all of them and we'll sign them all from me, from Dave and the kids. And at least Dave has the wherewithal. If that person is opening the present in front of us and that person then says, oh, thank you so much for XYZ, he'll say, oh yeah, I put loads of thought into that. And massive sarcasm, because obviously he has done none of the purchasing. And around the room, there's a kind of ha, 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 ha.
Let's talk about that. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh!
Hang because on a minute. Why have we been for generations, maybe even for centuries, maybe Renaissance people were gifting each other always or something, and all of their
always since Eve. Since
what
Eve.
Was
oh
going
my God.
On? Because how come we do that? That was always a thing in my household too. It all of the male counterparts in any of my in my family. Like, yeah, my dad will get a little snigger at, oh, I really thought about it very much. Ha ha ha, I hope you love it. My uncle Simon, he'll go, oh, marvellous, yes, yes. Oh, of course, I knew what that was. And everyone goes, ha ha ha, every time. Whereas, this year, I'm not going to laugh. Solidarity with the women who are buying presents out here. All the men. Whoever it is that's buying the present, no laugh for the person who does a self-deprecating joke about the fact that they didn't know what was underneath that wrapping paper. No, a stern look is all I'm going to give this year.
And you know what? Also, because I've had this year as well, Dave has been genuinely surprised that on some gifts his name has existed on the card. And it's like, why would I leave you off? That would look really weird, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. You know? So of
have you ever written and Dave in your left hand?
No, not that bad.
I think I've done that.
No, I've never done that because I want it to be blindingly obvious that I've written everything, I've wrapped everything.
Yeah.
I've bought everything. It's from me. And
I think I've gone so far as to do and Doug and forge a signature.
I should do what I should is make sure that my name is really big. I should do it like a kind of almost like a cover. So my name, you know, love from Esther, and then everyone else is underneath. And I think I might do that next time.
Nice. Okay.
So, yeah.
Do them in tiny, tiny footnotes, or like Esther and then one, or like an asterisk, or you know, a little thing, and then you have to look. You have to go find it on the rest of the card. Yeah. Have you ever had a card to? Oh, sorry, you go, because mine was a bit of a change of tact.
I was going to say that I do occasionally. There's a couple of friends of mine. I have a. Have we talked about nicknames on this? Because I've got my nickname from years ago, which we haven't we?
We talked about. Have we discussed on the pod the badgers or whoever they were?
Oh yeah, I am related to them. It's not them.
Esther is related to several Sylvanian family members.
I am indeed. I am. It's not them. But I occasionally, just for a couple of people, I sign myself off as Woody, right? Because my name used to be Woodman. But to one couple, I sign myself off as, or us off as, Woody and the Newmans, because I think that sounds really funny, because it sounds like a little
funny. It sounds like a little band,
right?
Yeah.
And I wonder if maybe that's something I should continue. That would sound like a good thing, and obviously it'd be needed to pay for everything. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I
think that's perfect. I was going to say, do you ever get a card on the other end of the spectrum? You've done the writing and you've written the whole thing and gone to love from Esther and Dave and Felix and Ted in tiny, tiny little writing underneath. Do you ever get them where they're like to Emma and family or whatever?
Oh, right, yeah.
I get really offended by those ones. I'm like, if you don't know the family, then you're not. Then don't, just don't put, then they shouldn't be in your address book.
Yeah, that is weird.
That's
very strange.
Weird to send a Christmas card to someone who you don't know the name of their partner or their children.
Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah,
that is very, very odd.
What are people doing there?
Unless it's like your estate agent, because you'll find that this year, actually. That's a very odd thing after you've moved into your new house, is you suddenly get like Christmas cards from estate agents. You're like, oh, okay.
Will I?
Yes.
Oh, I look forward to that. I remember when Doug was applying to uni, he was applying to Gloucester Uni, which I think now is got quite a lot going for it, but was relatively sort of new in the old, or at least the course he was applying for was quite new or whatever. And he got a Christmas card from them.
It's so strange, isn't it?
It was really weird. Yeah. It was a bit of a beg, to be honest. I think that kind of sealed the deal. He was like, I'm not going there. Send me a bloody Christmas card.
Very weird. Very peculiar.
It is strange. Oh, well, I can't wait to get cards from the estate agent. That's going to really warm my heart.
Fun times. Fun times.
Yeah.
I had, in a great big handbrake turn.
Oh, go.
There was one thing I just wanted to quickly say before we got right to the end, because I don't want to miss it. Because do you remember last week I was banging on about running past people, or maybe it was before, but running past people with kind of public music.
Keeping an eye out for it, and I've yet to encounter it still. I've been running in busier places on purpose to see whether it happened, but it still hasn't.
I strongly suspect that it doesn't happen quite so often in busier places, because where I've really noticed it has been along the canal. Although that said, I was along the canal on Sunday and didn't notice it at all. It's definitely a thing, and I'm definitely still annoyed by it, and I'm still stamping my feet about it. But anyway, absolutely no one emailed to say that they'd had similar experiences, but I did get a message on Instagram.
Oh, did you?
And I got a message, and I got a message on Instagram from one of our faves, and it was from Dean, who bought us all the chocolate brownies at the running show.
Yes, lovely. We love Dean.
And he said, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, or I hope he doesn't, because I did say that I would. He says that he listened to the newest podcast on his big run today, and when you were talking about people who listen to music out loud, I ran past a man blaring classical music.
Oh. And,
right, okay, so not only that, but it was a lapped trail ultra event, which is laps out of back. And this meant I passed him 10 times.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And knowing classical music, it was probably the same fucking piece of music.
Oh, it's going to be...
Still going on 10 hours later.
Fucking Holst and the Planets or whatever. Yeah. I mean, like, oh, my God. Just like... He does follow it up by saying that he did do his first 50K.
That's very amazing and impressive.
Maybe he was helped to do that by the classical music. But how rude is that?
So rude. That's next level. In a race. In an organized event.
But to be fair, that's the first time that I'd heard it was the New Forest half.
And I found
that so unbearably rude.
Because you're at the Bath half.
Yes, I will.
I'm really interested in this, because I would have even less reason to think that people would do that in a race. Because most of the time, I guess we're talking, you know, about how big an event it is. But like, a lot of the time there is music going on. There'll be like stalls and stands and cheerleader zones or whatever. People have got their own headphones on. I don't get it. I still don't get it.
It's so bad. It's
terrible
so bad.
Sound quality. So why are you playing out of your tinny phone speaker or whatever rather than listening to it on your headphones? And how are you not realizing that that's annoying, especially on a lapped race? That's pretty bonkers, isn't it?
Oh, that's awful. And I like with the half marathon, I found that awful because it's very difficult, like particularly... You know, when I noticed it, we were, I mean, good, like halfway through the race. And so when you're halfway through the race, you've basically found your people. You're not going to be overtaking loads of people or weaving in and out.
People aren't going to be weaving in and out of you.
You're kind of, that's it, right?
So then you're stuck with them.
You're stuck with them forever and ever and ever. It's like, I don't want to hear your music.
Yeah.
I just don't want to hear your music. There's no consideration for people that want to listen to something else or that want to listen to nothing. It's like, it's so selfish, even if the kind of initial thought was, do you know what, I'm going to do this thing and it's going to be like cheering people along. Even if that's the thought, it's like you have to reach the end of that thought. You have to think about people that would enjoy it, but you also have to think about the people that won't, which I suggest is 95% of people. Oh, I'm so cross about it.
I love how cross you are, and I'm fully expecting to see a headline in the Bath Chronicle next week. Local woman murders man with speaker at running event.
Oh my God. But it's not going to be that, is it? Because this is the Bath Chronicle. This is Bath and it's me. So it'd be like local woman gives side eye to man with speaker.
Man doesn't notice.
And that's still going to be front page.
Oh dear. Well,
I mean, I will see you every day until you do it. But if I don't, good luck. Yeah. You're going to smash it. I'm really excited to sing you around the course. We'll be on Great Pulteney Street. So look out. And if any of you are running the Bath Half, look out for my choir. We will be singing on, Great Pulteney Street. I think it's at about 10:45 and then at 11:45. So depending when you're, and we've probably got about 20 minutes, half an hour in us.
I have no idea when I start. Look, what are you going to be singing?
Would you like to hear the set list?
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on, let me just find it. We'll be singing.
Actually, well, do the set list and then I want you to sing a bit of it. You can sing us out.
Oh, would you like me to? Okay, hang on.
Of course.
Here's the set list, right. This is also, spoilers, because this is the set list for our, for the day, the concert that we're doing as well. A day at the musicals coming up very soon. Tickets still available, but selling very fast. I'm not going to lie, that it sounds like a joke, but we have actually sold 1,400 tickets for this event.
Oh my God.
I know.
That's amazing.
That's kind of a big deal. Okay, right, this is what we're singing. We're singing Shadowland from Lion King, an underrated but a classic.
I really don't know that one. Yeah. Okay.
We're singing Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat from Guys and Dolls.
I don't know that one either.
I'm so nervous about that one. Do you not know that one? It's Sit Down, Sit Down, Sit Down, Sit Down, Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat. It's a classic, but oh my God, it's quite complicated.
Okay.
It's quite complicated to sing. Then we're doing City of Stars from La La Land.
City of Stars.
That's Bristol Show Choir. I was like, I haven't learned my favourite things from The Sound of Music.
I know that one.
Then we're doing Go the Distance from Hercules, made famous by Michael Bolton.
Yeah, don't know that one.
Oh, it's so good. That one's great. Don't Rain on My Parade from Funny Girl.
No, that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love that one. I like to go, life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. In that one, I like to really go for it. We're singing Sunshine on Leith from Sunshine on Leith. I don't really know that one, but if you know, is it the Pretenders?
Yeah.
Or the Proclaimers?
Proclaimers. It's more like
which are the Scottish two?
Proclaimers.
Yeah. Proclaimers. That's the ones.
Yeah.
That's their musical that they did.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie, I've not seen it either. Then we're singing fucking Masquerade from Phantom of the Opera. I hate that one. And it's got some stupid choreography as well.
Oh,
it's one's really, really dumb. I hope we're not doing that one when you walk past, when you run past. Okay. It's really silly. And then we're closing the whole thing with One Day More from Les Mis.
Do I know that one?
One day more, another day, another destiny.
Oh God, my musical knowledge is bad, isn't
it? Yeah, Esther, I'm shocked. You don't know a lot of these, but I'm sure you're still in for a.
It's because none of them is from My Fair Lady. That's why I know.
No, the closest you've got is Funny Girl, isn't it? Really,
and I definitely knew that one. But yeah, if
I'm surprised that you don't know "Sit Down, Your Rocking Boat." Go away and listen to the Guys and Dolls soundtrack now. That's right up your street.
Okay, well, because it's old.
Because it's old. But there we go. So look out for my choir on Pulteney Street. We'll be singing you round, and I'm quite excited. I know that it's going to be a bit of a blur for you and you're not really going to be able to see them, but I'm excited for you to see some of the characters that are part of this choir.
Oh, you're going to have to tell me. Well, no, you probably
I'll tell you my nicknames for all of them in private afterwards.
In private, yes, not on this.
Thank you for listening. Come and join us on Patreon. You can get a ton of extra Pod Squad benefits from just £2 a month, including newsletters, live chats, and you can join our exclusive Discord community for friendly chat and support with like-minded women runners. Go to patreon.com/womensrunning to find out more. This podcast was recorded over Zencastr. The producer and composer was David Newman. Please hit like and subscribe. That way you won't miss the next episode. Do please email us at wrpodcast@anthem.co.uk with any questions or running stories, as we would love to include them in a future podcast. Happy running.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.